a long way to travel for a date.
Right?
I would make sure you really, really, really like her before committing to anything like that. Do you still have any family out there?
Yeah, so I could make an excuse. I could just fly out there to see my family. And
I mean, do you fly out? Yeah. Do you go back there anyway, periodically?
No.
Okay.
No. Maybe for Christmas, but I didn't go last year, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like, the idea of flying somewhere for a first date feels like a guy who drives 4 hours to get a drink.
<It's> like... Damn. Okay. All right. When you put it that way.
Like, you know, if it was something like, yeah, I go back there, like, you know, every Thanksgiving or whatever, it's like, okay, cool. Yeah. Like, meet up with her.
Yeah.
To fly for a first date, man, there needs to be some fucking fireworks going off.
All right. Well,
and it's funny. So, like, this is a great situation, right? This is like a great example for what we were talking about because,
yeah.
I already, like, I can tell and I know from my own experience, too, that thought of, like, what if we fly and meet somewhere? Oh, my God. Like, that, it's, there's such, a rush of endorphins and dopamine. It's like, oh, my God, that'd be so exciting. Like, so romantic. Holy shit. And it probably would be for, like, a day or two. It could also be a total disaster.
Yeah.
But I know where that comes from. There's a huge emotional rush that comes with it. And yeah, you don't need that.
No.
Like, at that point, you're flying for the rush. You're not flying for the girl. So,
okay.
If you fly anywhere, it needs to be for the girl. And if to fly somewhere for a girl, man, it needs to be pretty serious.
Okay.
Yeah, back when I was nomadic, I did a couple things like that. And, man, so I remember there was this one time I met this woman. I was in Argentina and I met a girl at a party and she was traveling. She was from Europe and she was like backpacking or whatever. She's like, yeah, I'm leaving Buenos Aires tomorrow. We hooked up that night and we're like hanging out in my room at like 4 a.m. And she's like, oh shit, my bus leaves in like 6 hours or something. And I'm just like, I'm going to come with you. And she was like, what? And I'm like, I was in my head. I'm like, this is so ballsy and romantic. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to come down with you. And she's like, really? Like, and so we go and it was blissful for like 48 hours. And then on the third day we woke up and we were just kind of sitting there and we had nothing to talk about. And it was like, it got really awkward. And then she started, and then I was like, well, I guess I'm going to go back to Buenos Aires. And she like got really upset. And I'm just like, well, what do you expect? And that was out of the few times I tried something like that. That was the one that went the best.
That went the best?
Yeah.
Damn, Mark.
Because usually, and look, it's like when you create a situation that is that dramatic, and that, yeah, like, over the top.
There's no way for it to live up to,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you can never live up to it. It's just, it's you're setting yourselves up for just, like, something that's impossible. And, yeah, and actually, I had a friend who, he actually flew a girl halfway across the world, and within 12 hours of getting there, she was like, I want to go home. And he was so convinced. He's like, no, she's different. She's really special. Like, I've never met anybody like her. And I'm like, dude, I think you're kind of blowing her up in your mind because you had this really fun experience. And he's like, no, she's really special. And then he planned all this stuff. And yeah, it was first day, she's like, I think I should go home.
Oh, shit.
Again, it wasn't anything wrong with either of them. It was just your expectations just get so, especially with distance, like it just gets so messed up and you get so caught up in this drama and this like romantic comedy narrative. You know, you start thinking you're like living Sleepless in Seattle or something. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, yeah, this is meant to be. Oh, my God. And no, life doesn't work that way, actually. Successful marriages are really boring. That's the surprising truth, is that it's a good marriage is boring in most cases.
I can't help but wonder, what is intimacy? What is connection? I mean, I, I, I feel this connection with Jennifer. I kind of feel a connection with this girl from high school. And I find myself also like sometimes reviewing in my mind girls that I've dated in the past or that I knew in the past that I kind of discounted for some sort of one-off, I don't know, something that I didn't like about them, right?
Right. So you asked what intimacy is. My best definition of intimacy is the feeling that you can completely be yourself around somebody, no matter what, no matter what's happening, what's going on. And I think the reason why values, why compatibility and sharing values and sharing perceptions of the world is so important is because when you're with somebody who has similar values to yours, it makes it easier to simply be yourself around them. Finding women who share your values, who care about the same things you do, for the simple reason that that is going to make it easier to experience intimacy with them. It's easier to get to that point if you know where the other person stands, if there's like a history of trust and support from each other.
So Mark, how did you go from being a nomadic, for lack of a better word, player to finding your wife and discovering that you have similar values to the extent that intimacy can exist, how it does? Like, did you make a list of all your values and she did too, and you compared notes, and it's like, well, how do you check that out?
So here's the funny thing about values. Even if you don't list them, they're still there because your values determine your decisions. So, you know, for me, one thing I learned after a while is that the more I open up about who I truly am and what I care about and what I value in my life, a few things happen. One is you find out very, very quickly if the woman across from you feels the same way or not. Two, if she does feel the same way, man, she's like way more into you and vice versa. Like, it's the attraction happens way, way faster. You don't have to sit around and talk for hours and hours and hours. And then three, if she doesn't agree with those things and believe the same things, then it's pretty much like over immediately and you both kind of feel it. And so you don't waste time going on date after date after date. And I think what most people, and I think most people, they're not even aware of this. They approach dating, it's kind of a sales job. So they kind of think to themselves, they're like, okay, what kind of things are women into? Okay, those are the things I'm going to talk about. And it's very innocuous. Like, one thing I say as much as I possibly can is that, you know, 99% of men are not predatory. They're just dumb. Like, they don't know any better. and so you kind of get into this like, oh, well, she really laughed at that, so I'm going to keep doing that. And like, she says she's really into this show, so I'm going to go home and watch a few episodes and tell her I'm into it too. You know, and it seems very innocuous, and you can actually even convince yourself that it's romantic because you're like, see all these things I'm doing for her. And it's not. You're actually doing both of you a disservice, and women do it too.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of self-work to kind of cut through that bullshit in yourself. And this is one reason why on our last call, I pushed you into like doing some more service-oriented things and finding non-dating things in your life to be proud about and feel good about.
Yeah.
If like the major place in your life outside of work that you're getting your self-esteem is dating, like you don't really have any perspective on how much the person across from you is, you know, you really like each other or not. But if you've got all these other things in your life that are going on that are really cool and you care about, like let's say for instance that like I'm extremely passionate about environmentalism. And it's like I spend half of my free time each week like dedicated like environmental charities. And then I go on a date with a woman and she's like, oh, so what do you do in your free time? I'm like, oh, well, I volunteer for these environmental organizations. And she's like, yeah, climate change is a hoax. Date's over right there. Like there's no bullshit. There's no like, well, maybe if I did this or I said this or, you know, maybe it would have worked that. It's like, no, it's over. It's like, and it's not personal. It's just like, but if you don't have those things outside of yourself, those values to rely on, you just kind of sit there and you like, you just feel out whatever seems to feel good. As a result, it takes months to really even find out how compatible you are, even if you have the same values. And as it sounds like it might have happened with you, with Katrina, it's like you end up falling in love with somebody that you don't even share values with. And you're like, well, fuck, I'm like so attached to this woman, but like she sees the world completely differently than me. And like, fuck, that puts you in a hard position over and over again.
As far as being authentic, I feel like generally speaking, I'm pretty authentic. I've had friends tell me that, you know, I'm sometimes a little bit of an oversharer. One thing that is like particularly polarizing right now is the political climate. And so, yeah, I voted for Donald Trump. Literally like every girl in the age demographic that I'm seeking, it seems like, hates Trump and just like, fuck Trump. And literally, like, if they have a dating profile, that's what it says on their dating profiles. Fuck Trump. if you vote for Trump, swipe left, you know, shit like that. And I'm just like, don't really pay much credence to that because it's literally every female out there. And so when I go on dates, like, it's something that I maybe don't bring up. Or if it does come up, I like don't show my cards. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes I hide under the guise of like, well, I see both sides of it, right? Like, I also think he's a pig just like the girl across the table from me does.
Yeah.
I also just, I stand behind my vote, but I just choose not to bring it up. Yeah. Because maybe under the guise of like, maybe I can help her gain some perspective, you know, eventually down the road once I put some marbles in the jar first, you know? And it's like, no. I mean, I really, at the end of the day, if she has fuck Trump on her profile, we're not going to mix.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. And, you know, it doesn't matter how pretty she is. Like, I should not be not revealing that card.
Yeah.
So that I can perpetuate one of my so-called fantasies.
Right. It's a great time to talk about this in our country because I feel like the ability for nuance is just like gone out the window. And I think a lot of it went out the window on the right under Obama, and now we're seeing it go out the window on the left under Trump. And I think pretty much everybody feels very conflicted, both on the right and the left. Everybody feels very conflicted about the politicians that they end up supporting. But bringing it back to dating and your dating life, you know, maybe that's what you screen for, is somebody who can engage in nuance and be like, well, look, yeah, he's a piece of shit, but I believe in smaller government and lower taxes and X, Y, and Z that the Republican Party supports. And it's like, I voted Republican for years, and it's like, yeah, he's an asshole, but fuck.
Yeah. And I also empathize with every social issue that you self-identify with and therefore can't even fathom his existence as our president.
Yeah.
And let me just make one more quick confessional.
Sure.
back with Katrina, I remember her confessing to me later that, you know, she ended up voting for Trump as well, but much to her chagrin, because she liked the idea of being able to vote for the first woman for president. And so she wanted to be able to do that. But because she felt like I would shame her and her family, but probably mostly me, if she had voted for Hillary, she didn't.
Wow.
And she told me that after the fact, and it broke my heart.
Yeah.
That I had the dynamic of our relationship, that how I had treated her had influenced her to the point where she didn't feel like she could do that, what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you should talk about, say like, well, look, I don't love him, but I'm Republican and, you know, I think he's done some good things. And first of all, I understand how painful that's going to be. I don't envy you at all. But
I don't envy who you voted for at all.
Because here's the thing. It's any girl you date who hates Trump, you can either have that fight now or you can have it 2-3 months into the relationship.
Yeah.
And if that's a deal breaker for her, it's much better to get it out of the way now. And the other thing, too, is like, basically, anybody who's going to work in a relationship with you is either A, going to be a Trump supporter, or B, be somebody who can thoughtfully engage, have a debate about it. And so you want to find that out early, too. So if she's like, is willing to put aside her own views and like talk to you and like hear your perspective and argue some things with you and not think you're a horrible person, you want to find that out super early on too, because that's a huge indicator to you of certain character traits and personality traits that are great to have in a partner. I want to point out that this is a great example of how difficult vulnerability is versus fantastical drama. Mike is a guy who will ransom his house for a woman. He's a guy who will seriously consider flying across the country for a first date. But to have an honest conversation with a potential partner about who he voted for, that's too hard for him. It makes me think that Mike actually uses drama and romance to hide himself. The same way Mimi hides behind ambiguity and Jerry hides behind his work, Mike hides behind grand gestures of love that are completely impractical and or inappropriate. Back when models came out, I used to get emails all the time from guys who were like, hey, man, so I tried like the whole honesty thing, but like didn't really work. Like she didn't sleep with me. And I just... Oh my God, I used to get so fucking mad. I'd be like, dude, did you not read anything? The point is like, there's so many psychological benefits of basically creating that intimacy that we were talking about. Being vulnerable and getting to that place where it's like, okay, I can just be myself around anybody. Ultimately, that's the ultimate goal. But like, be myself around a woman I'm dating. Like, it doesn't just make for better relationships. It doesn't just make the attraction that you experience healthier and more intense. There's all these psychological side effects that are like healthy. Hmm. And, you know, ultimately that's the most important thing, I think. Mike is starting to get it. I think actively practicing being satisfied with a duller life is good for him. And I was proud of how he reacted in the situation with the ex. He didn't make it about him. He chose not to play the power struggle game. Instead, he empathized with her, let himself feel bummed out, and backed away. Mike has learned a lot in our sessions. Hopefully, he will get more comfortable with saying something disagreeable on the first date, a first date that he hasn't flown halfway across the country for. Similar to the first fights in a relationship being a good indication of whether it's going to last, I feel like you can learn a lot from how people deal with bad dates. If they're able to let go and move on quickly, that's a good sign. If instead they create a bunch of drama and enter into a power struggle with someone they don't even like, then that's no bueno. Vanessa hops on the phone with me after a particularly bad date. She's been seeing this guy on and off for a couple months, and she's kind of worked up about it. But as she describes how she chose to respond to the guy, I see some of her new assertiveness and boundary setting shining through.
He wanted to go to a Japanese-style grill, which was sort of like a Benihana.
Yeah.
And he was very excited. It was his birthday. And, you know, you can get these souvenir drinks, and it comes in like the ceramic doll-like thing. And he was very excited about his. And as we had a good meal, it was a little odd. Like, you could tell he was a little bit weird. But then when he said, like, we could take the glasses home, I was like, well, I know that, but I'm going to leave mine here. And he said, oh, well, why are you going to leave it here? Like, this is a souvenir. This is to commemorate my birthday and our time together. And I was like, that's great. You can take yours home. And he kept pushing on it first. Like, this was a good 20 to 30 minute conversation. And I wish I was joking. really do. Like, and we were sitting on the end, and I could see that other people at the table were kind of starting to, like, it wasn't loud or anything because I wouldn't pick up the bait, but internally I was like, holy shit. And everything in me wanted to bolt, because he's like, I feel like this is indicative of how we think about our relationship. And he used his hands as a gesture, but he's like, I feel like I'm going this way and you're going that way. And I was like, it's a glass. And and then he started into the story about how he does this with everybody, like all of his friends, when they take him out, they all get souvenir glasses and everybody takes them home. And I was like, well, okay, because they want to. I do not want to take this glass home. And he just kept pushing and pushing. And then he's like, well, I would think you would want to remember this night with me and celebrating my birthday. And I jokingly said, as I'm paying for the dinner, I was like, well, I have this receipt to remember the night. And really and truly, if my computer hadn't been in his car, I would have walked out.
It was that bad.
It was that bad of a vibe. And so I knew at that moment that I was going to end it. And I was just like, I just need to get my computer out of the car.
Well, Wow.
I was walking to my car and he just left. Like, didn't wait to see if I was safely in my car, if my car started, nothing like that. Like, if you, which to me, if you're really serious, like, you're going to wait to see if I'm okay.
Yeah.
That's just a caring thing. So don't tell me, like, our relationship, we're thinking about it in two different ways. And for him, that wasn't even a big deal.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you had kept the cup, he would have.
Yeah, I was. Well, but that's the thing. Oh, so I left out a good part of it, too. So he was going to take both of these cups. And I was like, fine, but if this shows up at my house, I will throw it away. Yeah. Like, I won't give it back to you. I will throw it away. We go to leave, and he doesn't take his cup. And I was like, are you 3 years old? Like, this is... And then I even stopped in the middle of the restaurant. I was like, after all of that, and you're not going to take your cup? And he was like, oh, I'm just joking. And he went back and he got it. And then he's like, no, I'm not going to take it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I can't. Like, this is crazy.
Wow.
I wish it was a sippy cup now.
It sounds like it should have been.
It should have been, right? Yeah. It did have a straw.
Wow.
Vanessa is turning into a badass. She goes on a date with this guy who demonstrates immature, controlling behavior, but instead of placating him, she tells him exactly where to shove his cheap souvenir cup. We move on to an update about Vince. Apparently, Vince had another huge blow-up. Vanessa decided to bring a date to a work office party, and Vince found out.
Me bringing somebody is a big deal because I usually show up to something like by myself or with a girlfriend, and it was basically like your senior prom where you walk in and everybody stares.
Yeah.
Here I am with this guy and everybody is staring. So that wound its way back to him, to Vince.
Yeah.
Through some other people that we knew here. And he flipped out and he had this conversation and he starts calling me names on the phone. Like, you're trying to be controlling and that I'm fucking psycho and that I'm crazy and all this. And I stopped him and I was like, whoa. I go, you can't talk to me like that.
Good.
And I said, it's not okay to talk to me like that. I go, you either talk to me with respect or we don't talk at all. It kind of, I think, took him by surprise. And then he hung up on me, which I was like, okay. Like, if that's how you're going to handle this, it's how you're going to handle it. And then he called back a little bit. First, he messaged and he said he was sorry. And then he called back and asked if I would take a call. So I felt like I had established a better friendship boundary there.
Mm-hmm.
He later said in an email, he's like, tell me the truth. He goes, were you with another guy? And I was like, yes. He was just like kind of stunned in it. And I think it took him aback because I said, look, you've spent nothing but the past year yelling at me. We have like this, it's been so intermittent, the good times, and it's very clear how you've been responding to me. Like, I'm not going to stick around for that.
Yeah.
But I do value our friendship, and I'm hoping that at some point in time we can get back to that. And I said what you said. I realized that that might take some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think while I was gone, he kind of really thought about that, because when I came back, it's been more of a friendship. Like, we talk about work things. We don't talk all the time.
Yeah, how often do you talk?
Maybe a couple times a week.
Okay.
There's few messages.
There's no, like, sneaking around on email accounts. It's like normal people
yes.
talking.
Yeah, okay. It is. It's like normal people talking. And,
okay, that's good.
You know, it what's also nice is he told me that he's seen a therapist.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's why I think, like, me changing and telling him I'm not going to be another outlet for him
yes.
like this. There's a ripple effect, but obviously only to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, he has to take that torch and carry it, but that's great to hear. You finally standing up and saying no to him has shown him that that's not the end of the world. And if you can say no to him and it doesn't ruin everything, then maybe other people can say no too. And maybe it's his problem. So yeah, it's a really cool thing to hear that.
It's different now when he backslides. It's more like, I'm angry and I don't want to take it out on you. So I'm going to, like, go off the grid for a little bit. So to be perfectly honest, I think that I have said no. I don't think he's fixed the lashing out at anybody. I just think maybe he's lashing out at somebody else now. Like, I've just put up that barrier. I don't think that after all this time, like, it woke him up and said, like, I can't do this to anybody.
No, no.
I just think, like, I can't do it to you.
By barrier, of course, Vanessa means boundary. She's communicated to him what she expects from him, what treatment she will and won't tolerate, and she's sticking to it, thus making him responsible for the consequences of his own behavior. And to do that, she's had to make herself vulnerable. She's had to state the situation for what it is. No more secret email accounts. No more shared calendars. No more fantasy world where he leaves his wife. This is reality. And this is how it's going to work. And she's fucking owning it like a boss. While Vanessa continues to get better at asserting herself, I check back in with Jerry, who is, well, doing Jerry things.
You want the good news or the bad news?
Let's do the good news first.
The good news is I have not heard from my ex.
That's great.
No hate mails. We blocked her, or I blocked her. It was the right thing to do. And yeah, so it's peaceful.
So what's the bad news?
Well, I don't know if it's bad news or not. So I'm on to like month 10 with my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And she continues to be awesome, and I continue to be fearful of the whole thing and stressed out and fearful.
Has that stress and fear grown lately, or is it kind of just... Okay.
It's picking up speed.
Is that because she's moving soon?
November 1st, I have to kind of decide what's next.
Yeah.
And so I'm totally freaked out.
And what else? What else is...
Well, work is stressful. Our sex life is fucked up now because I screwed up in the sense that I've become rather indifferent about it, which is really weird. Right, guys? We were supposed to walk around with a hard-on all the time.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been the case. And so that's gotten kind of funky.
Yeah.
And I don't completely understand it. I have some theories, but...
How is she taking that?
She's been good about that. I mean... understanding, I guess, not mean or bitchy, but we need some resolution. We need to figure some stuff out. So that's kind of crappy right now, and I don't really understand it.
When did it start?
A few months. It's not like I don't want to fool around. It's like I don't care if I do or I don't.
Yeah. You've just lost interest entirely.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. I don't initiate anything. So that's kind of lame, right?
Is there anxiety? Because I know a few months ago we talked and there was a lot of anxiety when you got physical with her. So yeah, that's still there?
That's still there to some extent. My theory, and it could be completely wrong, but it has something to do with this idea of connection.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm deathly afraid of. And I think we talked about this before about picking wrong again.
Yeah.
I haven't been to picking school. and it could be physiological too.
I doubt that. You're a healthy guy.
Yeah.
You're not a spring chicken, but
yeah, at 53, your sex drive shouldn't really be.
It shouldn't fall off the map.
It shouldn't fall off the map.
Yeah. I think it's, I'll tell you this, 9 times out of 10, it's anxiety in my experience. Like anxiety just immediately inhibits sex drive, arousal, everything.
I was going to say, would you put stress in that category? I mean, I have a lot of stress around work stuff that's been overwhelming in the last couple of months.
If you're just coming home exhausted and you're just like, if you're just like, oh God, like that sounds like a lot of effort.
Sometimes that's it. Sometimes it's like, I'm just tired. I just want to go to sleep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could definitely contribute. But it could also be, you know, if each time you're getting intimate with her, because the more anxiety there is around the intimacy, the more effort it's going to feel like it requires. And so if you're tired and you're busy and you're worn out, the energy doesn't line up. Both contribute. But yeah, it could definitely be stress and being overworked, in which case that's pretty normal. You know, it's like as long as this isn't a permanent thing, it should come back.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it has less to do with business stress. I've been stressed since the day I started working. There's always something to worry
about.
Yeah,
of course. Like I said, 9 times out of 10, it's anxiety, and particularly anxiety around intimacy and commitment.
I feel like it's commitment. It doesn't feel like it's about that she's going to be satisfied when it's all over.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't worry about that.
You're like, I got that down.
I got that figured out.
I like how you snuck in the bro bragging, you know, to make up for the...
You like that? That was subtle. Yeah, I didn't think
the embarrassment of not being interested. You're like, yeah, but when I am interested...
Look out.
Okay. Anyway, back to apartments.
In 2 months, she has to tell him what she's doing, if she's renewing her lease or what she's doing. So I've made zero progress on getting used to the idea of doing something different.
Let's not be so hard on you. Because I think this issue, it got better for a while, and then I think it's come back because it's so close. Have you had this conversation with her yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
We talked about the different alternatives that are available to us, which is keep things as they are. She keeps her apartment. I keep mine. Nothing changes. She moves in with me into my place. I have a 2-bedroom. There's room there that has its pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
We get out of the building that we're in and we just go find a house to rent. That's option 3.
So what's your vote?
I don't want to vote. I want to abstain.
Well, that might be the issue. All the practicing with, you know, telling her that the AC is too cold or whatever, like, this is what you've been practicing for, is this conversation. Jerry's desire to abstain is its own type of fantasy. The fantasy of not having to deal with anything icky or uncomfortable. Maintaining this fantasy, the fantasy that everything is hunky-dory despite the obvious reality that it's not, requires a lot of mental and emotional effort. Keeping your head in the sand ain't easy. Maintaining this fantasy, the fantasy that everything is hunky-dory despite the obvious reality that it's not, requires a lot of mental and emotional effort. Then he wonders why his manhood parts don't rise to the call of duty.
So if you were going to try to identify something that tells you that you are ready for that step, it's not that you're so excited, you're like a giddy little schoolgirl about moving in together. It's like the idea of it doesn't...
Terrify you.
That's the place that you're trying to get to. That's when you know.
Because ultimately the fear here is the commitment.
What's the fear? What am I afraid of? Am I afraid that... I don't know.
Well, there's a part of your subconscious that it's like that associates marriage with everything that happened with your ex. And it's you just got out of that and just survived that. And so that part of your brain is screaming like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, it was like I said on the recording, right? It was like I take it from moving in together to losing half my stuff again.
Yeah, it's you jump straight there in 2 sentences without any prompting or any, and that's actually not rational at all. I mean, you can break up with somebody at any minute.
That's true. That's completely irrational. She can move in and I can tell her that it's not working out a month later and she can go rent some other place.
Exactly. Or you could decide like, you know what? I love you and I want to spend my life with you, but I don't want to be married again. There's a million different options and forks in the road between move in together and lose half your shit. Those two things are fused in your brain because of everything you went through.
And I think about that too, just like moving in equals losing half your shit. Moving in equals like you got to combine all your stuff. It's like, no. I don't think that's a good idea. She's got to be in charge of her own finances. I don't want to know what she spends her money on. I don't care. Right? The last thing I want is some relationship where I'm pissed out because she spent $42 on a bottle of shampoo. They do that, Mark. They do that.
I see the bottles. I don't ask questions.
Yeah, don't. You're much better off. Ignorance is bliss. Trust me. Right? But finances and relationships, that's a whole other topic, right?
Yeah. And if you're not feeling up to that, then, man, don't take it on. Because the worst thing you can do is force yourself to take it on because you think that's what she expects. Because it's, you know, all those big steps in terms of like progressing the commitment to each other. If you ever take any of those steps without both people being ready, it gets ugly. And this is like one of the most fundamental mistakes that people make is that they'll have a relationship that's fucking up and they won't really know how to fix it, but they'll convince themselves like, well, hey, if we just move in together, or if we combine finances, or if we get engaged, that will fix everything. Or if we, or even worse, if we have a kid, that will that will fix everything, because that, that next level of commitment changes the landscape a little bit, and it kind of removes, it lets them forget about their problems and incompatibilities for a little while. But all it does is just multiply whatever problems or discomfort there was before. So it's like, if you're having this anxiety now, then, you know, moving in together would probably just multiply it. So it's you need to get comfortable now. What I would say is you should definitely have this conversation with her in the next few weeks and just talk through what you're feeling. Tell her the good, which is the relationship's great. I'm getting more comfortable with everything. But then tell her, then say, like, I have a lot of anxiety, and this is where the anxiety is coming from. And I think simply the act of kind of talking through that, talking through the whole moving in together equals losing half your shit, I imagine she's going to be very understanding and kind of like, hey, it's okay. You know, we should do what we're both comfortable with, and all that stuff. I mean, hopefully, I think the best case scenario is that starts to kind of lighten that burden off of your shoulders. It starts feeling less scary. But it, for it to feel less scary, like, you're going to have to talk it out. It's never going to feel less scary, you know, you just sitting around and dwelling and worrying about it. But if you talk it out with her and it doesn't feel less scary, then you absolutely have to stand by that and be like, look, I'm still kind of freaking out here. Because yes, it is an irrational emotion. And yes, you don't want to make decisions based on irrational emotions, but you also don't want to put yourself in a situation that will trigger that irrational emotion even more. You have to be careful here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I totally agree. Having a conversation about some of this stuff would relieve my anxiety.
And have a conversation about her expectations. I mean, for all you know, she'll be like, look, I'd love to live with you, but if you're not ready, that's totally fine. Like, stop worrying. You know, like, if she said that, that would probably, like, immediately fix 50% of this. At this point, it's clear Jerry's problem boils down to vulnerability. He's opted out of power struggles and is slowly but surely setting boundaries. He's practicing stating how he feels about little things. But now it's time for him to put on his big boy pants and state how he feels, explicitly and respectfully, about something important. He's reached a point where he's doing more harm in his relationship by not speaking up than he is by expressing himself. Love is often proportional to our ability to be hurt. The more fiercely you love someone, the more crushing the potential to lose that person. Therefore, we find ways to mitigate our feelings or to protect ourselves from being too exposed. And for those who have lost and suffered and especially been abused, it can be terrifying to allow themselves to ever love or be loved again. This is why vulnerability takes some degree of courage, because exposing yourself is scary but also necessary. I often describe it to people as like jumping into a cold swimming pool. You walk around the edge for a few minutes, maybe nervously dipping your toe in, but ultimately not getting wet. When you jump, there's the initial shock from the cold and sense that your body is going to freeze. But within seconds, the water becomes refreshing, then soothing, then so comfortable that you can't even remember what it was like standing on the edge, afraid to get in. The question is then, how do you give each person the courage to make the emotional jump?